This is the L3 Leadership Podcast, episode number 249. Hey, podcast family, and welcome to another episode of the L3 Leadership Podcast, where we are obsessed with helping you grow to your maximum potential and to maximize the impact of your leadership. In today's episode, you're going to get to hear my interview with Tracy Morrow. She has been on my interview bucket list for quite some time, and it was an honor to actually be able to sit down and get to interview her, and she was incredible. I had 1,000 questions for her, but we ended up going a different direction, and I absolutely loved it. We spent the majority of the interview talking about her journey from needing and wanting to please people to leading people. And I am in the middle of that journey myself, and to hear her insight and what she's learned, and she actually gets personally mentored by John Maxwell, and the insight that she gave me that on how he's been mentoring her through that process has been incredible, and you're going to get to hear all of that in the interview today. Let me just tell you a little bit about Tracy before we dive in. She was one of the founding Beachbody coaches with Team Beachbody and was actually the company's first top coach. She's a board member of the John Maxwell Leadership Foundation, and she is also the host of John Maxwell's Live to Lead simulcast. As I mentioned, she is personally mentored by John Maxwell. She is a mom of 6, that's right, 6 kids, and she has been married for 28 years, and you are just going to love this interview. So enjoy the interview, but before we dive into that, just a few announcements. This episode of the podcast is sponsored by Baritone Advisors. The financial advisors at Baritone Advisors help educate and empower clients to help make informed financial decisions. Find out how Baritone Advisors can help you develop a customized financial plan for your financial future. Please visit their website at Baritone Advisors, that's Beratung, advisors.com. Securities and investment products and services offered through Waddell & Reed, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC. Baritone Advisors, Waddell & Reed, and L3 Leadership are separate entities. Well, hey, Tracy, thank you so much for being willing to do this interview. I've been looking forward to this for a long time. And why don't we just start off the interview with you just telling us a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Well, it's an honor to be here, Doug. We have been trying to make this work. We've gone back and forth for quite some time, so I'm happy to be here as well. I live in Los Angeles. This was supposed to be my big year. 2020 was supposed to be like the year. I'm turning 50 in a couple weeks. My husband's turning 60. We're having our 30th wedding anniversary. So we were really planning that we were going to do something really special with unique people every month of 2020. Just to kind of commemorate the year. And so who knew that one of those special things would be locked in our house for God only knows how long. But we are making the most of our time. We live in a suburb of Los Angeles. We live with our 3 sons, our firstborn and our youngest 2. So our youngest 2 are teenagers and our firstborn is 27. He's kind of jump starting his adult life. And so he's living at home for a while, going to school, working full time. Thankfully, he's able to work from home. That's been a real blessing that all of us have been able to either do school or work still from home. But I have 3 daughters who don't live here. One's married. My son, she and my son-in-law live nearby. And then my other 2 daughters live together and attend school and work about 2 hours from here. So we're spread out, but we are still finding fun and unique ways to stay connected.
That's wonderful. And I know you have a huge passion for leadership. And so I want to talk a little bit about your leadership journey. I'm sure it began before this, but I know that you had the opportunity to be one of the founding coaches in Beachbody's team. And I'm just curious, and you went on to be one of the best coaches in the organization. Can you just tell us a little bit about your leadership journey and what you wish people knew about it that they may not know?
Absolutely. I was born into a family of leaders. So it was just kind of that you lead. And no matter what situation that you're in, you lead. And but they're mostly educators, teachers, and leading in school. And I knew that that wasn't my course. And so when I was 21, somebody gave me a cassette tape of John Maxwell and said, you got to listen to this guy. He's coming out of the church into the business world, and they're saying that he's the next big guy. And I didn't even, at that point, I'm 21. Everybody's new. I don't know who's the next guy or the guy who's been there for forever. Everything's new. So, but I took that to heart and I started listening to him because I thought I was a hairdresser and I hadn't had my kids yet. I'd been married for a short time. I got married young. And so I started listening to him thinking that I was going to learn about business. And really what, if anybody listening has heard John Maxwell or read John Maxwell, what he talks about is the leader, not necessarily managing or business. I thought in my young mind that I was going to learn business, how to run a business. And I was pleasantly surprised to find that he talked about becoming a person worthy of having, of leading people and having people follow them. And so that started my journey. I used John's cassette tapes and books. Certainly it wasn't as, you know, readily available as it is now. You can just hear about a book and order it on Amazon. Back then in the early 90s, you had to go to a bookstore, or you got something at Costco or something like that. So I just remember listening to his cassette tapes and listening over and over and really practicing. I used it to develop a culture in our home. I used it first in my family. And then my husband and I, as we started having kids, we became youth pastors at our church. And for 11 years, we used that to develop our leadership team to grow in a small church. We had 1 to 3 kids on any given Sunday. And over the course of developing a culture, like John talks about, of people really feeling noticed, seen, welcome, a part of something, we ended up having like, I don't know, I think it was like 35 middle schoolers and 60 high schoolers, which was crazy because it practically the youth was bigger than, you know, if not as big as the adults attending that church in that small church. So we learned a lot in that, you know, you learn a lot. It's every little step. And then it really opened up an opportunity for me to become a Team Beachbody coach. I was a customer at first. And our CEO, Carl Deichler, said, "Hey, Tracy, you know, I really want you to help me launch this. I want you to help take the spirit and the heart of who we are as an infomercial company." At that point, I was kind of working with Tony Horton. He and I had met through Beachbody, and we were hosting fit camps around the country. Tony Horton's the P90X guy. And yeah, that's what you said. You got some good results, huh?
Yeah. It changed my life. So I'm very grateful for P90X. Yes.
Me too. Not just in the fitness, but in my whole life, it changed the way my life path went because it opened up an interest for me. I thought I was just going to lose weight after I'd given birth to my fourth child. But really what it did is it ignited a passion in me to go like, wow, people should know how that it really is easy to eat healthy and exercise. You just need a formula, a pattern, and someone there to support you. And so anyway, we just launched the network marketing aspect of Beachbody, which was, I'd never been a part of that before. And so every step of the way, my leadership just kind of led me to the next thing. And I would practice there. And then I would go to the next thing. And I would practice there. And it just, doors start opening when you consistently develop yourself.
Wow. You said so many things that I want to dive in there. I want to talk a little bit about culture because it sounds like who you became through going through John's content, it was more about who you were than what you did. And so you started developing this culture in youth ministry, and it seems like you just kept doing that same thing no matter where you went in your leadership journey. Can you talk a little bit about creating culture and the culture that you try to create with the teams that you develop? Because clearly you've done an incredible job with that. So I'm just curious how you, when you're just starting from scratch, what advice do you have for leaders in creating culture?
Well, when I started from scratch, I did it probably pretty wrong because my experience up until that point was in my family and in a youth ministry. So in my family with 6 children, 4 of them are biological. Our youngest 2 are adopted from Ethiopia. We have a big family. We're multiracial. We have a unique story. And so Casey, my husband Casey and I decided, yes, we are Tracy and Casey. It's almost Serbian. But we decided that we wanted to have, based on really, I loved my family growing up. And so I had a picture and a model of what it looked like. And then John kind of breaks down the process for business, but I took it into my family. Like I've seen it. And now he's showing kind of like the behind the curtains that you don't necessarily see in the family that you grow up in, unless you really start interviewing your parents as a young adult of what they did. And that helped too. But we decided that we wanted the culture within our home to be stronger than the culture outside of our home. And we knew that was a tall order, especially as they got into teenage years. we lost them for a little while where they, you know, they probably thought we were the worst ever, but it was still, there was a culture established that, that has gone the distance now as they're in their 20s and, you know, getting into their career, starting to get married. So what I did is that and a youth ministry in that situation, I'm the leader, but they're also kids and I'm leading kids. And I felt like when I first started building my business, I felt like, I'm a person of faith. I felt like in a way, it sounds funny, but I feel like God said to me, you know, you've graduated. you now get to lead adults. And so what I did is, based on my experience, I led in a family type of culture, which is normal and appropriate in my family and in a youth ministry. Those kids are coming into church. A lot of them have a hard life at home. And so that's the place where we can welcome them in and help them to feel loved and seen and valued. And so when I started to build my business, I built it kind of with that same culture, which set me up sort of as the mom. Mm-hmm. And what I found was, people would say, I would say they knew that they were loved by me. They knew that I loved them unconditionally. So whether they did the work or not, I was leading by example, but whether they did the work or not, I was still going to love them. So they were getting the basic need of wanting to be loved. And that really was fulfilling. And so what I had was like grown adults who were older than me saying like, I wish you could adopt me, Tracy. I feel like you're my adoptive mom. And while that was such a beautiful thing to say, because it really does accomplish the root of everything that I want to do, is make sure that people know that I care for them and I value them and love them even. But not a lot of work was getting done. And I remember at Live to Lead, John had Cheryl Batchelder, who was the CEO of Popeyes, who really brought Popeyes to a great level of success. And she said something that really described my life. And she said, I noticed that in the business community, they're great at systems, but they aren't as great as showing their people that they love them. And in the faith-based community, they're great at showing their people that they love them, but not a lot gets done. Mm-hmm. And that was just like, that was an aha moment. Sure, we were having success and we were growing and people were coming into the pack and feeling valued and highly regarded, sometimes for the first time in their life. And that's something to be really proud of. But we had to have this shift where it needed to go, it couldn't be their mom anymore. As their leader, I needed to step forward and be seen as a woman who loved them, but was like a mom love, but leading them to and setting up expectations on the front end so that they knew that there were expectations. That was a huge learning curve for me, to be totally honest.
So that is exactly where I am. I told you I had the opportunity to have lunch with John. And the one thing he said to me, because I'm moving from people pleasing to leading, I'm in the exact same boat. And he said, Doug, I had to make the decision that I would always love people, but I wouldn't depend on their love. And for me, I realized I was so dependent on what other people thought or if they loved me or et cetera. And so I feel like I'm at the beginning of that. Can you just dive into that a little bit more about how you made that transition and what you learned?
I sure can't. I'm still learning. I'll just be totally honest. And the fact that I had that same conversation with John, I wonder how many people does John have to have that meal conversation with? But it was me and John and Mark Cole, and we just finished an event, and we were grabbing a bite to eat at the Atlanta airport. I can still remember it. And Mark was sitting next to me. I can just picture it. And John was across from me, and he said, Tracy, you need to decide, do you want to lead or do you want to be loved? Because there comes a time in a leader's life where they aren't going to love you. They're not going to like what's happening because it's uncomfortable. And when you lead people, it has to be that way. Because that's true leadership. Is sometimes you don't create an uncomfortable situation. You just lead them through those uncomfortable situations, and that requires uncomfortable actions. And so he said, and you can choose to continue to just love them and be loved, but it's going to halt your leadership journey. And he kind of looked at me with that loving face, but also a mentor's face, like, you need to choose. It wasn't like he was doing exactly what I needed to do. And so he showed me, as so many ways, he shows me how to do it by how he interacts with me, because I love him. He's like a father to me, a mentor, a lifelong. He is that voice outside of my father and my husband and my brothers, you know, who've gone the distance, who has continually been that voice into my life, leading me to the next thing. And sitting across from him, he showed me by example. And thankfully, I was wise enough to recognize that he was saying to me, you need to choose. You need to take a next hard step. And he said it in a loving way, but he said it with an expectation that I needed to choose. Hmm. And I thought, that's what I need to do. And I said, well, how? I want both. And he said, he laughed at it. Girl, you can't have both. You can't have both. I knew you were going to say that. And I said, well, how do I do that? How do I go back to my team and be a little tougher? I mean, I don't have an experience with this. I just experienced it with him. But how do I go back and be a little tougher without them thinking, number one, did Tracy think she got to such a level of success that she thinks she's better than us? You know, honestly, that is deep down a fear that I don't want them to think. I believe too much of myself now, that I'm elevating myself above them, and I won't be. You know, does that make sense at all?
Yep.
So if you get it, like if you're in that position, then you know that feeling of it would break my heart. But at the same time, as a mom, I do say those hard things. I have those hard, challenging conversations with my kids. But I don't know, I felt like I didn't translate that very well into my business. So he said, what you need to do is you need to take some time and write down all the things the way old Tracy did things that they're used to. Because he said, if you turn too quickly, you'll whiplash your people. So you need to say it over and over again, and you need to make a list of old Tracy, and next to that, make new Tracy, and then get them on a call. He said, get them in person, but if you can't get them in person, we did a Zoom call, and I did a big, you know, hook, like, I have something really important I want to share with you. If you can at all make this, I've had it on my team Facebook page. And so I said, I want to come to you. John has challenged me with something that if you know me, you know I've wanted to grow for a long time. Would you say that's fair? And they know me. They know that about me because we know each other so well. And I said, part of growing is doing hard things. And John is now mentoring me. And one of the things he's asked me to do is extremely uncomfortable for me, because I'm just going to be vulnerable and say, my fear is that you will misunderstand the spirit of what I'm sharing with you. Hmm. And so can you just hear my heart? And if you have any question of what my motive is, would you just ask me privately outside of this? But I need to share with you, in order to grow, there are some things I've been doing dysfunctionally in our business that have not been good for you. And so first I want to ask your forgiveness. I didn't do it intentionally. But part of growing is I'm seeing I did some things dysfunctionally, and that in some way capped your growth, and I didn't mean to, and I hope you'll forgive me. I'm really sorry about that. And they're like, you know, and I said, I don't want you to unmute yourself and tell me how much you love me. I appreciate that. What I really want to hear is, if you don't sense it from me, let's have that. Mm. But I think we know we love each other enough. But I'm going to share a list with you that I'm going to change. And it doesn't mean, oh, Tracy's changed. She thinks she's better than us. It means Tracy's growing, and that means she's going to change, and it's not going to be the same. And so I'm going to tell you some things that I used to do and how that wasn't good for you and me. And then I'm going to share with you some things I'm going to be doing now. And so I just went down that list, and some of us cried, and some of us were like, some of them said, well, I don't really want to build in that way. I liked being a part of the team. I don't want to grow to the next level. I'm really comfortable with the size of my business. And my fear is that you'll leave me behind. And I said, well, I have to keep growing, and I will never exclude you or leave you behind. It just means my time needs to go to different things if I want to grow myself. But we built this because you wanted to build it your own way. That's the beauty of network marketing. You build the kind of business that you want. And I would never want to push on you the way I want to grow my business, but I want to keep going. And so, so we had some, you know, there was some clarifying that I had to do to make sure that mostly people just didn't want to be left out or feel like I didn't care about them anymore. And so I was, that's very easy for me to make sure that they feel and know that I love them. And I will, if they need me in a pinch, I will do anything. But at the same time, I have such a huge family. I don't even talk to my mom as much as some of them wanted to talk to me. And so I was starting to feel like, you know, I need to take back the reins and put up some clear new boundaries that I didn't know to put up before, that I'd kind of made it, it kind of got to where I was overwhelmed and burdened. And so, anyway, so it was good conversations, and it was, what came of it is we grew into the next level and setting it, John always talks about setting expectations on the front end rather than making repairing things on the end. And so setting those expectations of a new start was really healthy and good for my team. And it weeded out naturally people who just wanted to be a part from those who really wanted to push and grow.
Oh man, I'm going to want to talk to you for the next like 6 hours. That was so good. And every leader listening to this needs to do that exercise. I'm going to do it today. I did not get that exercise in the lunch, so thank you for that. If we have time, I would love to hear some of those things, old Tracy, new Tracy. But you talked about how you got to a place where you had to basically determine who gets your time and who doesn't, or create more boundaries around that. Obviously, John has too. One of the things I wanted to talk about when I was preparing for this is, you know, John's been saying something recently a lot of just be unforgettable, and get out of the pile. He uses the Jack Welch quote a lot. And it seems like in your life in leadership, whether it's Carl Daikeler, John Maxwell, a youth ministry, you've consistently become unforgettable to people. And you've consistently gotten before people and they want to give you their time, right? And I'm just curious, one, you know, we were talking before we jumped on into the interview. You know, I remember you posting a video, you know, a couple years ago of the first time you met John when he spoke at a Beachbody event.
Yeah.
And now I believe you sit on one of his boards. You're traveling the world with him. Can you talk to leaders about, there's so many directions I want to go. Can you talk to leaders about earning the time of a leader and how you can serve a leader in a way that you become unforgettable?
Sure. Number one, it's intentional and it is authentic. So I think sometimes when we're intentional about something, it can start to feel fraudulent because we're trying to force an outcome rather than really being intentional to, I learned it from John a long time ago when I was in my 20s, and it was just add value to people. Hmm. And I figured out that a long time ago, what people, you know, my mom said, it's probably the best, kind of the best thing she's ever said to me. And she says a lot of good things is, you know, Tracy, at the bottom, if you boil it all down, at the very bottom of every person, at the very base, every person just wants to be loved. Mm-hmm. And that really became, I mean, I'm even wearing this choose love hat. It kind of became an umbrella over my life of what is, how do you love people? How do you really love them? Not in a way that it serves me, but loving people authentically, what does that look like? Because I wasn't so good at it. I can remember in my 20s, I was short fused with people, and I wanted the best for them. But when they didn't do the plan as was clear in my head, in my youthful, immature thinking, then it was frustrating to me. Because it was like, specifically being in youth ministry, it was seeing things that kids were struggling with and having conversations with parents and not seeing things fixed when it was clear to me what the kid needed. And so that drew like a cynicism in me. And I can just remember that was embarrassing to me because I knew it was wrong and I knew I wanted to love them, but I didn't know what is really loving somebody mean. And so I spent 3 years really just praying every day and asking God for me to see people as he sees them, like really to see their value. Because if I want to add value to someone, I need to see value in them first. And I did, but I also didn't. There was an immaturity in me that was snappy, that was short-fused, that was like, well, you know what to do, just do it. Well, life is not so black and white. There's a lot of gray. And so I feel like God really, by in those next few years, how he showed me how to love people is brought really hard and frustrating people into my life and trying to climb. It's not like I had this all of a sudden warm and fuzzy feeling. It was more like I stepped inside of the pain of some people's lives, the messiness of some people's lives that I had not experienced personally. And I didn't have the answers so clearly as when I was a few steps away from it. because when you're in it, it's a lot harder. It's a lot more painful. The stakes feel higher. It's uncertain. And so in that moment is where I really learned to love people who were felt stuck and in a mess and were afraid to take the next step because it wasn't for sure how it was going to turn out. It's way easier to give somebody like, oh, this is what you should do. But at what cost to them? You know, there's always a cost to doing the right thing or the hard thing. So I feel like that really helped me to soften me and to kind of, you know, if you know the Enneagram at all, I'm an 8 on the Enneagram. And most people with about the greatest compliment you could give me is to say, you're an 8? Oh, I would have never pegged you for an 8. They're usually a little edgy. And I'm like, that's the best compliment you could give me because I've worked really hard to let those edgy, sharp sides of me that to let God really grind them down and sand them off of me to take a hard look at the ugliness in me and say, that's not who I choose to be. It's natural for me, but I choose not to do that. And then developing the habits around that. What was your question again?
So
we got talking. I was like, wait, where did I?
You're right on track. Basically, I just asked, how have you become unforgettable to people?
Oh, right.
Allowed, yeah.
So learning to notice people and love them, make eye contact with them. So something I heard from John, I can't even tell you what it was in my 20s. I make agreements with myself, kind of a thing. It's prayerfully, but it's like I decided when I was 20, if I could do at the most that it depended on me, if I can make a decision that was the best decision, even if it was hard, that I didn't want to live with regret. So that was one of those things. It was like moments where I would say, oh, I really want to do this, but I should do this. But I made that decision with myself that I'm going to choose what I know is right rather than the lazy choice or the easy choice. And so I started practicing that. Did I always do it? No. But I, for the most part, I can discipline myself. And so I just started looking at people and deciding that I wanted to create an experience. So when somebody had an experience with me, whether they never remembered my name, I want them to walk away feeling loved with as many senses as possible. Hmm. Obviously not taste, but I mean like, lick my arm. No, but I want to have good breath and a perfume that's not overpowering, but smells good. So I found a perfume, and when people would start to go, oh, strangers would say, that's a great perfume. Then I'm like, okay, that's a scent. I always, you know, have mints or gum, so I smell minty. I want to look, even getting ready for this. I mean, I'm kind of sipping on a coffee right now, but I brushed my teeth and mouthwashed and had a mint before I came here because I'm getting in the mindset of creating experience with you. Whether or not you feel it, it's how I honor you and our time together. So it's being visual, touching somebody if I can touch their arm. I'm, you know, touch is one of my love languages anyway. So holding somebody's arm and, you know, really being present, not letting my eyes wander around if we were in a conference room or on the street and, you know, action is happening around. I have really tried to discipline myself to not look around if somebody's talking, to really be present, you know, not be on my phone, so that when people walk away, they feel honored and loved. And whether or not they can put their finger on it, I don't want them to go, my goal is never, wow, Tracy Morrow is the best. It's more like that lady I felt so good about myself when I was with her. So there's two thoughts. You can go down the route of, I really want to make, the behaviors can look the same. The mindset is all the difference in the world.
So
if the mindset is, I want them to like me, I want them to think I'm the best, I want them to tell other people about me, I hope John Maxwell notices me, then behaviors may look the same, but the motives are different, and people can sense it. They can feel a behavior, but they can feel also a motive. So if your motive is not sincere and authentic, but you're, how can I promote myself? That does come across. It's a kind of like one of those things you can't touch or feel, but you sense it really strongly if you're aware. And then the other side of it is, how can I just make this person feel so loved? Like, I wake up, God, there are people who are going to come across my path today, and you know all the details of their life, and I don't. And help me to be a little bright spot of showing them your love today. so that they walk away feeling loved and sense there's something there. So oddly, when I started that in my 20s, now I'm almost 50 years old, it's become a habit. It's become a mindset. I don't even have to physically think it anymore. I just wake up knowing who can I love today? Who can I be? I kind of have a vision of myself as like one of those tall, kind of like a Christmas tree or a forest tree. That's just a big, tall arrow. So that when somebody comes to me, they don't say like, I want to be like you, Tracy. Then I've missed the mark. But if they say, there's something about you. People aren't even people of faith, or they don't even know my God at all. And they might say, there's a light in you. And that's when I know, okay, I have disappeared and let God's love shine through me and helping them be put on the platform and feel important. And so when I started doing that, then people noticed that when you're really looking at them, someone once said to me, a speaker at church once came up to me, found me in the crowd after church and said, I have to tell you, you have the gift of audience. You have the gift of being an audience member. And I said, can you explain what that means? And he said, you make eye contact, you laugh, you, every time I looked at you, it was like you and I were sitting over coffee and we were having, you were like fully engaged in what I was saying as if I was only talking to you. And that's not in any way, please hear me. That is not in any way to call attention to me. Any person can do that. Any person, it's not anything unique to me. I just feel like that is what helps you have connections with people. And then God does make those connections where he brings people across my path, and it might only be for a few minutes, or it might turn into a John Maxwell. I mean, when I met John, I wanted to say to him, you know, I'm not a super fan kind of person. I'm not like, oh, there's all these celebrities I'd like to meet. But if there was one person in my life who I would have said I'd like to meet, it would be John, just to say, I cannot imagine me without you. I don't know who I would be if it wasn't for you. I don't know who I would be, a completely different person. My marriage would be different. My family would be different. My career would be different. And so I just want to say thank you to you in those moments where you are writing a book in the early morning of day or the late night. I don't know when you write them, but when you wrote, I'm one of those people, my life was changed because you took the time and put pen to paper and had a book published, or 10 and or 100 with John. but that changed me. And so then he's like, oh, Tracy, I pray for God to bring people across my path. I wasn't saying it. And he said, give me your card, we'll work together. And he called somebody from, it was Mark Cole at the time, I didn't know who it was, called somebody from his staff to take a picture of us and said, send that to Linda and tweet that out. And he said, let's mark this day. And John has told me, you know, I took that picture and I showed Margaret and I said, his wife, Margaret. And he said, this woman God has brought, we're going to work together. Now, when he said it to me, Doug, I was like, oh, that's so John Maxwell, making everybody feel loved. You know, who would ever think that's real, you know? But he followed through. And I mean, we've just had he has become such a dear friend and family member to me. And I think it's because I wasn't thinking about the outcome. I'm not saying every person who comes across his path, everyone who reads his stuff and is impacted by him wants to meet him. But in my case, God did something with it. And then I just want to say one other thing. I have found that when you offer to pray for someone and then actually pray for them and then follow up to ask how that thing turned out, or share an insight from as you were praying for them, what came to you, or what you wanted to, how you wanted to encourage them with another quote and another saying. I feel like that in every group, I try to pray for somebody as God puts it on my heart to say, hey, can I pray for you? And then actually really do it and follow up. That has caused more second and third conversations because I didn't promote myself. I just said, how can I pray for you?
Wow. That was incredible. Because I'm time zone challenged.
I know. I'm sorry. You got two questions? Dang it.
No. You have to wrap up, right? You have to prepare for another meeting.
I know. I'm good. I could go on a little bit more.
Okay. How much longer? Just because I'm challenged.
Well, I have 40 minutes. I scheduled out an hour and it's okay. Been 40 minutes. So
correct. Okay. We're good then. Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
And we'll edit that part out. So that was unbelievable. So when you boil it down, which is so simple, you become unforgettable by simply loving people intentionally, which is so, it's what Jesus said. I mean, it's amazing. So on the other end, so you, I love what you said, that you're influencing thousands of leaders clearly, and everyone's vying for your time, and you spend more time with some people than you'd like to even spend with your mom. Like, how are you, as someone who loves people, how do you determine who gets your time and who doesn't?
Well, that's also been something I've struggled with, because I have spent, when you really do value someone and they want your time and you get on the phone, that they sent and they sense that, that turns very quickly into an hour-long conversation where they finally have someone who's asking them a question and really cares about the answer. So I was having a lot of too many long phone conversations that were nothing to do with work. So I really struggled with, like, well, there is a ministry aspect to my job, to my life. But when am I in ministry and when am I working? And the two were kind of fuzzy. I can't say that I'm exactly great at this still, because I leave it very open for God to lead that moment. So something I might call, no, this is a job, I've got only 30 minutes, and someone starts to share something and I have an insight into that, or it's something that, you know, they just need an ear. I leave that very open for God to direct my path. I kind of use that example of Jesus, how he's heading somewhere and the woman who's bleeding touches his hem, and he's trying to get to the guy's daughter who's dying, and he turns around and he's like, who touched me? And they're like, everyone's touching you. You're surrounded by people. And he's like, somebody touched me. I felt like healing power go. And so she comes forward and said, me. And he says, daughter, and he recognizes her and calls her daughter. I mean, there's just this little moment in the middle of his busy, in the middle of I'm headed over here with a very direct, important plan. And yet this woman who nobody even knows, or, and she's been ostracized from her community for 12 years of bleeding, she braves up and comes in the crowd, even as a woman in that day when women were not honored on any level. And he gives her his time and calls her daughter. That is a life lesson to me, because what it says, whether you believe what you believe of Jesus, it was a beautiful leader moment. It was a beautiful moment where he stopped the important to the, what the world would see as unimportant person, and cared for that person. And that's what I try to do. But I also understand that I have a structure and I leave it open for God to work in that. So my structure is, now I work with the people who have real questions, who are building their business, and they have, I've systematized a lot of those questions, and I created an app, and I put our training on an app so that those questions, the questions I get the most of, are now answered on an app. But then the people aspect of that, I learned from John, I can't spend an hour with every person. So now what I've tried to do, like, that's why he writes books, is I can help more people by writing books. So I've just written a book. I'm in the editing phase. I like to make videos.
Give us a little highlight. What's it going to be about?
It's on communication in marriage. And awesome. Casey and I do a marriage prep class that we call the Big Merge. And so we do that, and we just love it. I'm passionate about that. And I just think we have created so many tools. We've learned about so many tools that if we had known about it this at the beginning, we wouldn't have butted heads so much. Wow. And so, but we have a great marriage. We love each other. We have an amazing marriage, and I believe it was hard at a lot of times. And so it's not like I'm sharing a book of how perfect we were. It's like, how did two people who are so opposite in every sense of the way in the world, and how did we align our lives and work so collaboratively to be this amazing, you know, unit, twosome, when people might not have saw that coming. So anyway, that's what I'm passionate about, that, and passionate about, you know, how the inner workings of a family, because I realize not everybody has seen a marriage work, and not everybody has seen how family works. We know that from our merge classes. And so I just, you know, not saying mine is the only way, but we found some ways to create a really beautiful family culture. And so that's kind of my little passion of how John really impacted my life and how I can now share that with other people. So videos, I like to do videos on Instagram. I have my 50 and 50, 50 lessons I learned in the 50 weeks leading up to my 50th birthday. And I may continue that on after my birthday, but finding ways to share things that I've learned with people that can reach as many people as possible.
I love it. I've loved every minute of this interview. I do want to take you through the lightning round because I feel like you'll be a ton of fun in that. But I do want to just, on the leadership end, I'll just leave this open-ended. Is there anything on your heart and mind that you want to share with leaders given where you are in your journey right now?
I think so many times we try to put on a leadership uniform and try and act like a leader we've seen or something, and we don't really feel like we're living our true authentic self. And I think my best word of encouragement is to a person who has inside of them that's like, I feel like I was made for more. And yet I'm in these same habits and I'm playing small either by choice or by circumstance. And I don't know how to get out of that. And so based on my experience, I'm sure there are other people who would share a different path, but my experience is the only one I can teach on. And that is really note loving people and noticing people. And if you have some things to get over, I'm a big fan of therapy. If you find it matters what your therapist is teaching. Like I always say, I love finding a faith-based therapist that somebody else recommends, but working through whatever might be holding you back. And then from there, starting down that path of once really loving people, because my husband Casey said to me one time, and it has stuck with me, is because I said, am I even good at this business at one point in frustration? And he said, babe, you love people. Anybody can learn how to do the business side of things. It's a system, but loving people is the most important part. I think it's harder when you're great at the system and you don't really love people. And so And so my word of encouragement to you is it's really as simple as that. Loving people and noticing people, not to let them walk all over you and you being a doormat, but really loving them, serving them, and realizing I'm on this planet for a reason. And it's not just to keep great things to myself, but to share them and experience them and with other people. And so start dealing with the things that hold you back. If it needs to be in a therapy room, do the hard work. I've done hard work in therapy as well. And I grew up in a pretty healthy and functioning family, but I still have dysfunction within me. So I've worked through some things, which freed me up to really love and notice other people, which is the most freeing thing. When you think of yourself less, not think less of yourself, when you think of yourself less and think of others more, it's an incredibly freeing. You just walk out into the world and you're like, I'm here for a purpose and I'm here to love you. And what can I do for you? And how can I serve you? And people eat that up.
I love it. And before we dive in, if people want to connect with you, one, I want to know the book release date because we can spread the word about that. I'd love to promote that. And two, where can people find you and connect with you so they can check out everything that you're putting out there?
I'm mostly on Instagram, but I have a website, tracymorrow.com. And so you can get in on to wait for information when we come out with the book. I have written the first draft. I sent it to an editor before I shop it around or see if I'm going to self-publish or what. So I thought I'd give it the best fighting chance to go through an editor first. And so now I'm in the editing phase before I shop it a little bit. So it'll be a while, but I have on tracymorrow.com and Tracy with an I and Morrow like tomorrow, not bone marrow. People are like, I can't find you. TracyMarrow. No, and no. But if you find me there and on Instagram, I interact and I answer back when people reach out to me. So would love to hear from you in that.
Awesome. All right, let's dive in.
Okay, I'm ready, I think.
What is the best advice you've ever received and who gave it to you?
Probably my mom. And she said, Tracy, when I was getting married, she said, your husband is not going to meet all of your needs. You're going to need friends. And that gave me two lessons. Number one, it took the pressure off of Casey to be my end all be all. Cause I think in my youth, I got married young. My mom also got married young. I knew that I needed girlfriends and other women and that Casey wasn't supposed to be my everything. And that freed up him, that freed up me. And then it made me look like, oh, that means other people need me. Just as much as I need other people outside of my husband, I need to be a friend to somebody else. And so that really helped me and really came into collaboration with what John said, adding value to people of like, oh, yeah, okay, this is what, I get this. People need me and I need them.
You could put a quote on a billboard for everyone to read. What would it say?
That's a great question. Live your great life story.
What's the best purchase you've made in the last year for $100 or less?
Oh my gosh. Can it be 140? It is my Instant Pot. My Instant Pot. I am not a cook. And I'm telling you, everyone thinks my son, who's living at, he's 27, he's living at home for a small bit while he's getting ready to go finish out college and working full time. And he said, I feel like I got a new mom. Because I've never been, God help me, I've just never been a great, I've never loved cooking. And the Instant Pot is super fun for me because you chuck stuff in there and it comes out making me look good.
I'm with you. And I don't know if it was just Christmas time, but I've seen it for under $100. So,
okay. So yeah, I have to call the 8-quart because we have a huge family. So I bet you
there we go. Good to know. Instead of books, what's the best book you've read in the last year?
A book I'm reading right now is called Upended, and it's all about being an apprentice to Jesus. And my husband Casey and I, because we're in the house of coronavirus, we are going through it with our adult daughters. So we all log in on Zoom and we talk about our big takeaways. And it's a great break it down, nuts and bolts, basic steps of what it is to be an apprentice.
Favorite podcast that you listen to, if you listen to them?
Yeah, you know what? I love, it's called Be Still, Be Free. And it is Sarah Godey. Chris Godey works for the John Maxwell Company, her husband. And so I met Sarah through Chris. And Sarah has an amazing, it is faith-based, it's for Christian women, but it's Be Still, Be Free. And all the things that women put on themselves and try to be this perfect woman based on scripture and what society expects and not being really sure, but always feeling like we never measure up, but always that, you know, feeling like we're on the treadmill. And Be Still, Be Free is very practical, loving, fun podcast for women. And I'm hooked on it. I love it.
That's great. When you get a chance to meet with a leader like John or any great leader, do you have a go-to question that you always ask every time you get a meeting?
Well, with John, it's kind of changed to a friendship of like, I do ask John, you know, questions about me, like, what are you seeing? Do I have a blind spot? Is there something, cause I spend enough time with him now, you know, where should I be putting my most effort right now to make my effort the most impactful? But I do like to ask the question that's really like mentoring questions. But I love to ask what other people are reading. We just spent last summer having a guy come in and build one of our walls, totally changed the way we do our, it's a big great room, living room and dining room. And the whole wall is a bookshelf. And so putting up great books up there. And so, yeah, I love to ask, what is a book that has most impacted you?
I'll tell you one, just, you didn't ask me, but
what is a book that has impacted you recently, Doug?
It's called The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry by John Mark Comer. Oh, it's the best book I've read in the last 5 years.
Say that one more time. The Ruthless?
The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry.
Elimination. Boy, now is a great time, applicable time because of coronavirus, right?
Yeah. Anyway, I think that'll be helpful for you.
Okay, I will get anyway. That. Do you read the book or do you listen on Audible?
I read, unless it has to be like a very high energy person on Audible for me to listen to. I don't know about you, but yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Or else if it's the author or the right narrator, I'll listen to it. But usually I'm a paper guy. So you said you asked what the greatest return on your time is. And I'm curious what, outside of your family, because I know that's important to you, what is the greatest return of your time and an investment of time?
I really believe that the way that you change the world is that you, Mother Teresa has a great quote that says, if you want to change, bring world peace, go home and love your family. And I believe that when we do our marriage prep and talking to people who are building a family and a family culture, I feel like that really is, and I love it because my Beachbody business is part of that, because being healthy is a big part of being your best self in your marriage and in your family. And so it doesn't matter if you've had a divorce. It doesn't matter if you, if you'd had to start over and you didn't do well at first. I built a business and I didn't do it well at first. And I kind of kept plodding along and not giving up because I was passionate about it. And so it's never too late to start where you are at today. And the best way that we can change our world is to change the structure and the culture of our family to be based in love and respect. And then from there, ripple out into community, into churches, into schools, into the state, into like it. We always think so big. How can we change the world? We change it by changing me first, and then how I operate within the culture of my family, and then expand from there.
So good. This will be one specific to you, but what's your favorite Beachbody program of all time?
Oh, of all time. Oh my goodness. I have two answers. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
Because Tony is my all time favorite. Tony Horton is my all time favorite, and hit anything with him, but I really specifically do like P90X3. And yeah. P90X Plus, those were two really great ones. He's just, I think there's nobody else like him. That said, we have recently come up with a new trainer, and it's going to be funny, because if you know this at all, if anybody listening or watching knows, we have a new program that is our first ever explicit program, which means explicit language. The trainer uses bad language in the program. And people were like, what's Tracy going to think? Because I don't use bad language, nor do I condone, nor do I let my kids use bad language in my presence. But this program, this guy is so good. He's young. He came into the business because of Tony Horton's impact. Mm. And so that program has a clean version. So it's called 4 weeks of the prep and 6 weeks of the work. And there's an explicit version and a clean version. Oh, and I'm telling you, he is lovable. And he is, you know, some things on the surface aren't always what they appear to be. An explicit program, it sounds kind of hokey. It sounds kind of niche-y. But it's an incredible workout. And he is a good trainer. So I would say right now that is, I'm in love with that program. And it's been a long time where I felt so much love for a new program and our new trainer, Amala Caesar.
Wow. Very exciting. Well, I just want to wrap up with just letting you leave any last remarks for leaders you would. I could ask you questions forever, but thank you for your time today. You added immense value to me, and I know that everyone that listens to this is going to be blessed as well. So anything you want to leave us with today?
It's my honor and pleasure. I'm so glad to meet you and spend this time together. It's clanging a gong, but it's really the same basic the message of don't make things too difficult. At the bottom of it all, people just want to be loved. And no matter what job you're in or where you are at, if you can begin to work to truly love people and add value to them, finding ways that you can add value to them, you can change the world in your little circle of influence. And don't ever believe for a second that you're too small, your community's too small, your reach is too small. Start where you are and see where that goes from there. Just love people.
I'd like to thank our sponsor, Henny Jewelers. They're a jeweler owned by my friend and mentor, John Henny. My wife, Laura, and I both got our engagement and our wedding rings at Henny Jewelers, and we absolutely love them. Not only do they have great jewelry, but they also invest in people. In fact, they give every engaged couple a book to help them prepare for their marriage, and we just love that. And so if you're in need of a good jeweler, check out Henny Jewelers at hennyjewelers.com. I'd also like to thank our sponsor, Babb Inc. Babb is an insurance broker, a third-party administrator, and consulting firm led by my friend and mentor, Russell Livingston. Russell is extremely passionate about developing the next generation of leaders, which is why he's partnering with us on this podcast. And he's also opened up his offices here in Pittsburgh to host our monthly leadership events. And we are extremely grateful for that. The nonprofit that I work at, Light of Life Rescue Mission, started using BAB as our insurance broker around 3 years ago, and we've had an unbelievable experience with them, and we highly recommend them. So if you or your organization has any insurance needs, please check out and learn more about BAB at babbins.com. That's BABBINS.com. Hey, leader, thank you so much for listening to my interview with Tracy Morrow. I hope that you enjoyed it as much as I did. You can find ways to connect with Tracy and links to everything that we discussed in the show notes at l3leadership.org/episode249. As always, if this podcast episode added value to your life, it would mean the world to me if you would share it with another leader that you think it would add value to. And if you would leave us a rating and review on iTunes, that really does help us grow our audience organically. So thank you in advance for that. And with always, I like to end each episode with a quote. And we talked a lot about John Maxwell in this interview, and I will quote him. And I think it's so telling of who Tracy is as well. He said this: "People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care." I love that quote. I try to live it out every day. Hey, thank you so much for listening and being a part of L3 Leadership. Laura and I appreciate you so much, and we will talk to you next episode.